Global Connections Television is a privately funded, independently produced program. The opinions expressed on Global Connections are solely those of the moderator and his guests. We invite you to go to the website at www.globalconnectionstelevision.com to view previous shows. If you're involved with a PBS or community access television station or an educational institution that has an intra-campus television hookup, or perhaps a podcast or just a computer and would like to share the programs, please feel free to do so. Global Connections is provided at no cost to help people in the U.S. and worldwide better understand how international issues impact our lives.
Welcome to today's Global Connections program. I'm Bill Miller. Today, we're going to be looking at some very unique and interesting concepts of looking into outer space and into future thinking. My guest today is an expert on these topics. Chris Kimmel is the founder of Humanity in Deep Space, an initiative exploring the challenges and hard problems facing humans as we transition to deep spacefaring species. He also is the co-founder of the commercial space company Space Tango. Chris Kimmel, welcome to today's Global Connections program.
Thanks, Bill.
Great to see you again. It's been a while.
Yes, it has.
It certainly has. Way too long. Well, Chris, let's just jump right into it. You've had some, I've known you now 40 years probably, and you've had some of the most unique concepts of any human on the planet. But how did you develop an interest and an involvement in the space industry?
Well, as you know, for 25 plus years, I was president of the Kentucky Science Technology Corporation, which was an independent company in Kentucky working toward innovation and creative thinking, et cetera. And while I was there, I got quite interested. One of the spinoff interests that I developed was looking at what it at that time, the kind of the emerging space industry, which was, you know, as we got looking, I started focusing on it kind of the mid-90s, late 90s. And it really just, it spun off from there and got an opportunity to meet some people that were really, kind of ahead of their time relative to space. And one was Bob Twiggs, who was at Stanford, who had developed something called the CubeSat class satellite, which are very, very small satellites. And that was really the kickoff. I got very interested in that and saw that as an opportunity for the creation of an enterprise and also an opportunity for Kentucky to do something unique that everybody already isn't doing. And so the initial company we created actually was Kentucky Space, which was a nonprofit, which I was president of, and that evolved into Kentucky Space, into Space Tango.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's such a fascinating topic, and it's one that's so important, especially now as we move forward into the 21st century. And I would imagine it's like a black hole in outer space. The more you look at it, the more interesting it becomes.
But it's fascinating. It's certainly a rapidly growing area and something we know a lot about and something we don't know a lot about.
Exactly. It cuts both ways. Well, now you're the founder of Humanity in Deep Space. What exactly is that operation and what does it do?
While I was co-founding Space Tango in helping to build that company over about 15 years or so, I got also very interested in some of the issues surrounding deeper space, humans making, making forays into deep space. The moon, you can argue whether that's deep space or not, is 3 days away, but we kind of incorporate it in our thinking. But then going a little deeper into space, where you're talking about missions of 3 to 4 to 6 months, like when people are talking seriously about going to Mars or other deep space destinations, and just a lot of the hard problems and issues that face us as humans, as a civilization, as we try to do that. The technology for propulsion systems and the technology for looking, going to deep space, whether it's Mars or somewhere in that area. We kind of know that we're certainly improving it, but there's a lot of other issues that we don't really fully understand that are going to impact us as humans and our civilization and our planet in terms of, isolation, human isolation in those trips, physiology. Are we really equipped? And a lot of ethical issues as well. And so that's what we focus on with Humanity in Deep Space. We really focus on some of the technology, but also more so the human side. How are we as humans going to maintain our humanity as we leave the planet? How are we going to do deep space exploration effectively, safely, ethically? And what are some of the really hard problems that face us as humans? Like, you know, a trip to Mars, one-way trip is probably around 6 months. So the early missions to Mars, I'm not talking about 200 years now when there's a high up regency on Mars, but the early missions to Mars are going to be 2.5 to 3 years. And, so things like looking at, the psychological impact on humans, the physiological impact, how we're going to do this, even some of the legal issues are involved in ethics, et cetera. So that's what the conversation is about.
Mm-hmm. And if our viewers would like more information, they can go to humanityindeepspace.com.
That's correct. We do a series of webcasts. They're all free. The ones we've already done, I think we're on our 15th or 16th webcast. They're all on there. They're free, and they deal with a range of these topics. And we also, we'll publish information off our website, and sometimes we have live events too.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, you summed it up very nicely a minute ago, and you said, "How can we keep our humanity, or what will be the implications from the ethical and physical standpoint, and psychological too, I guess,
right,
standpoints?" As we move into outer space, you've already touched upon a couple of them. What are some of the other major items that we're going to have to consider, especially in the ethical area? This is one that it seems like it might be the trickiest of all of them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the legal and ethical issues that surround all of this are very difficult and very complex. The kind of the oldest, I guess, treaty is the Outer Space Treaty, which was signed in 1967. Of course, that was even before we had gone to the moon. And it laid out a number of policies that a number of nations have agreed to about how we're going to do space and, the space for peaceful uses and things like that. Unfortunately, we also know humans being humans, and there's no reason to suspect we're going to be any different off the planet than we are on the planet right now. Those things have become somewhat controversial as to, are they going to be adhered to? How do we enforce those things as we become more prolific in going into space? And now we have, we are a spacefaring civilization. People, don't think about that, but we really are. This is not the future. We've been in space we've had humans in space since the 60s. We've been to the moon and back. We've had people living and working in space on the shuttle and in space station for decades. And we have very sophisticated machines and robots on Mars. We're simply an extension of us as humans. So this is not tomorrow. We are already a space-faring civilization. And with the advent of NASA expanding its viewpoint, things like SpaceX, Blue Origin, and others, private space stations. This is only going to explode, and so those kinds of issues must play a central role in how we're gonna do this. And even questions about what can you own in space? Can you own parts of the moon if you land there first? Can you claim things? Can you claim things on Mars? Everybody goes, well, the 1967 treaty says you can't, but again, that's a long time ago, and you have to figure out how do we update that, and how would you enforce it? And even space junk is an issue.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned the United Nations 1967 Outer Space Treaty. They were thinking about outer space way back when. It's been almost 60 years. And of course, we've accelerated the whole discussion.
Absolutely.
And the outreach. And we really have to get serious. And one of the main concerns, and still is how do you explore and utilize outer space and do it peacefully and not weaponize outer space, we've done such a great job controlling nuclear weapons on the planet. I'm sure we would do just as well in outer space, but this is, I'm kidding, totally kidding. But this is a serious, serious issue. And the UN has been in the forefront as far as bringing the countries of the world
right,
to talk about this and to try to lay out a blueprint or a strategy as to how we can use outer space peacefully. Have you been involved in any of these discussions, or I'm sure you're using some of the materials or?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Right. The United Nations and organizations like UNESCO and others have been really at the forefront of these kinds of, complicated discussions. And it's probably at this point, they probably are, in fact, the best entity that's out there in the globe today to address these issues and help us understand them and go forward. we all, I think, would like ideally to, yes, this, you know, everything's going to go for the, you know, peaceful use in space. But I think realistically, we know that's probably not going to happen, at least in the near future, given human nature and the problems that exist on the planet, which are, you know, going to follow us as we leave the planet. So those become very, very, you know, important issues. We did a webcast a couple of years ago, and one of the people on the webcast was a former admiral of the nuclear attack sub. And we were interested in having that conversation because when they go underwater for 3 months. And so there's some analogs there about when people go, you know, they're down there for 3 months, they don't come up, darkness, what do they eat, all those kinds of things. And I remember one point he said to me, you know, the other thing is that, you know, space is the ultimate, from a military standpoint, is the ultimate high ground. And so, you know, those are things that, you know, obviously concern all of us. And we're going to have to, hopefully we can figure out a way through some of that.
We certainly have to do it. And if we don't, it will certainly be at our own peril. You're watching Global Connections Television, which is a privately funded, independently produced program. The opinions expressed on Global Connections are solely those of the moderator and his guest. We'd invite our viewers to go to our website at www.globalconnectionstelevision.com to view previous programs. Also, if you're involved with a PBS or community access television station, or perhaps an educational institution that has an intra-campus television hookup, if you have a podcast, or you just have a computer and you like our shows and you would like to share them, please feel free to do so. Global Connections Television is provided at no cost as a public service to help us better understand international issues and how they impact our lives. Today, we're taking a look at how we can explore and perhaps at some point, and for sure, live in outer space, but to do it safely in a humane way and to do it ethically. And my guest today is an expert on this topic. Chris Kimmel is the founder of Humanity in Deep Space, an initiative exploring the challenges and hard problems facing humans as we transition to deep spacefaring species. Chris, this we could spend a day talking about this, but it sounds like you've got this very well under under control as we can have it, and we certainly need to keep moving forward. Do you find that there's more interest now as you have developed your educational programs and that type of thing? Do you find more corporations, governments, individuals are expressing an interest in this and want to get involved?
Yes, no question. Well, as the technologies continue to advance, and particularly the miniaturization of technology, which has helped us build much smaller, efficient, less expensive spacecraft and systems, and the global increase in launch capability and the more launches that are going up, it really has exploded. So there's a lot more interest that we're seeing in the research sector, in the corporate sector, and in the schools. I think a lot more schools are in getting involved with students, recognizing that they're going to be the generation that probably are the first to spend longer periods of time in space. So there is a lot more interest, and again, a lot more commercial activity.
Do you take your programs out to the schools to help educate the students?
Well, we have a lot of students who are on our webcast. Generally, our webcast that we do, we'll have students that are signed up. They're all free. We generally have somewhere between 25 to 35 countries that are signed up to hear them, which is another good thing, because this, you know, this conversation about space needs to be a planetary discussion. It's a planetary issue. It's a planetary problem. It's a planetary opportunity. It can't be just discussed by, you know, the United States and China and Russia and, you know, Japan and India and others. It's got to be a much larger conversation. So we try to engage him, and we partner with some people. There's an organization called Higher Orbits, which does exclusively work with young people across the country, students run by Michelle Lucas, who formerly trained astronauts. And so we do partner as well with other organizations who actually go out into the field and work with schools.
And of course, this program goes worldwide, so you may pick up a few more people.
That would be time. We're always interested.
Many corners of the world who would be interested. Well, Chris, clock is ticking as it always does, way too fast. But let me just bring up this other Space Tango very briefly. What was that initiative?
Well, Space Tango, again, the original company was called Kentucky Space, which was a nonprofit initiative that we started originally to explore and develop what was it in the mid 2000s, early 2000s, a revolutionary new concept was that the technology and launch capabilities was now allowing us to build and develop very, very, very small satellites, actually the size of tissue boxes, into space that were capable, and those have continued to expand. And so Space Tango was originally created as an enterprise to develop those satellites and launch them. And we actually did. Over several years, we actually did launch several small satellites, both into low Earth orbit and into orbit, and also near orbit, near space, what they call it. And then that went on, but then we had an opportunity. We got an opportunity to start around 2010 to start building some technology for space station. We got it. Somebody said, "Hey, we're interested in," we had gotten this kind of reputation of this kind of, rogue group in Kentucky doing some really interesting things. And so we got an opportunity from NASA and some other partners to actually try to build some of this technology for station, which we did, and that transitioned. And then from that point, actually Space Tango doesn't do any CubeSat or small satellite stuff now. It's all on space station. Fundamentally, what Space Tango is, it's a research, development, manufacturing, design company, really, that works primarily, not exclusively, but primarily in the biomedical area, putting things into what are proprietary labs on station. Space Tango has a number of proprietary labs on station. Space Tango launches about 6-7 times a year to station, primarily on SpaceX, but sometimes other vehicles, and fundamentally puts up things, cells, plants, different human systems, et cetera, to try to understand a couple of things. How do these systems work in a zero G environment, in a different physics environment, and what lessons might we learn that could improve life on Earth by allowing those things to happen? And also looking at obviously changes that could be the basis for biomedical applications for deep space. So they've flown, Space Tango has done a number of experiments with plants that are the basis for chemo drugs, looking at how structural changes in the plants that could make the drugs more effective. They've got some biomedical devices that could benefit humans, including retinal implants to restore sight. And those are all based on the idea that manufacturing those in space will be more effective.
You and I spend most of our time in the state of Kentucky, and it may come as a shock or maybe a pleasant surprise to many people around the world that Kentucky is actually much more involved in this particular type of area and issue than one would think. I think what most people think of Kentucky, people outside of the state, they think of Muhammad Ali, maybe Kentucky Fried Chicken, the Kentucky Derby, that type of thing. But Kentucky's number one export into the international marketplace is aerospace engines, is it not? It was
aerospace area. Aerospace and all the component parts, and space is just a portion of that. But I agree. I mean, there's some interesting things going on at Morehead State University. We're in the CubeSat area, and also with global sensing and radar. And Space Tango is one of the very. Space Tango is one of a handful of companies in the world that have access to the International Space Station and access to regular launches into space for that purpose.
It certainly is, yes. Well, you've had so many unique ideas over the past couple of decades. One that you had was the Idea Festival. What exactly was that?
Well, the Idea Festival started in 2000. And we started in Lexington every other year, and then moved to Louisville in 2006 and did it every year until 2017. And it was really evolved into a very interesting opportunity and event. The idea behind the festival was really to bring people together from all different disciplines, science, the arts, literature, philosophy, et cetera, technology into a combined forum, and to discuss what are some of the cutting edge thinking and ideas in those areas that all have also could have cross purposes with other disciplines. And so it turned into after we got our kind of got it figured out, really turned into a very, very great event, very stimulating 3-day event where you had people from literally around the world and around Kentucky, around the country in all different disciplines coming together. We had, we've had people there, for example, like Steve Wozniak spoke from, and we had Alan Lightman, who's written a number of great books and authors. We had artists. We actually had George Martin one year, who produced all the Beatles albums, where he did a presentation on the background of making Sgt. Pepper, the creative process that went to. We had dancers, et cetera. So it was really a really great event, and it, we did it for a number of years, and it stopped in 2017, really not because it wasn't still going well, but it just got, it got very, very expensive to do that, and just got prohibitive.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, that's the main goal, is to bring together the best minds
absolutely
that are in the world who can focus on these issues. And that's one of the advantages the United Nations has. It can bring the CEOs of
every
corporation in the world, if it wants to, all of the leaders of the world under one roof. And they do. They do it all the time for conferences and that type of thing. And that's what we need to focus on.
Yeah. I often say there's no such thing as useless knowledge.
Exactly. And you can't get too much of it.
That's right.
Very true. Well, we're just about out of time. The last minute or so we have, what is the Kentucky Science and Technology Corporation? What is its role and function?
Well, the Science and Technology Corporation was founded in very, very late 1987, 1988 by myself and Lee Todd, actually, who later became the president of the University of Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And the corporation is now, the Kentucky Science and Technology Corporation is now basically what it was created, what it evolved into, is an organization that promotes technology, technological innovation, science education, the creation of new entrepreneurial companies, et cetera. And so it went from one or two people to now it's like 30 or 35 people. Terry Samuel replaced me, he's now president of the corporation, and it is independent. And they do a number of things. They fund research at the universities. They also run the Kentucky Enterprise Fund, which at the time was the state's first early stage venture fund, a public fund to put money into companies. And that's still going on. And they've changed the name, I think, to Key Horse Capital. So it's basically an enterprise that was created to push the envelope in science and technology, including education in Kentucky.
And that is so important to do. Well, Chris, we're down to about our last 30 seconds or so. What would be your closing message to anyone who has an interest in this initiative, be it a student or a CEO, or whomever it might be, but what type of message would you leave with these people to get them more involved in what you're doing? Because it's so important to be involved.
Well, it's simply that I think there is a role for everyone. When you deal with space, there are a lot there. We have people who work with us who are space anthropologists, space sociologists, physicians, health people who work on some of the health issues in space, technologists, and people in the legal profession. Space law is a big issue. So there's something there for everybody. And for this to work, we're going to need the input and the expertise and the wisdom of a lot of different people, not just, astronauts or not just engineers. Everybody needs to be a part of this conversation. And again, if they're interested, we welcome them to get a hold of us through humanityindeepspace.com. There's a section there where you can sign up and leave a message, and we will definitely get back to you. And we get a lot of people that we come into our fold through that process. So, just to think about, we need you to be a part of this.
Well, it's a fascinating topic, and it affects all of us in the present and certainly will in the future. Chris Kimmel, I want to thank you so very much for a very interesting and a very informative program.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I'm Bill Miller. Thank you for joining us today on Global Connections Television.